You're listening to a podcast from 702.
For now, though, we are focusing on mental health because October, in fact, is Mental Health Awareness Month. How often have you heard, say, you know, someone that you know, a colleague, a friend, a family member, for instance, say that they're hesitant to have a conversation about their mental health condition with their boss or anyone else at their workplace? They're even reluctant maybe to approach HR. And why is the case? Sadly, and unfortunately, there is a stigma and there is a lot of discrimination associated with mental health. And there's fear of being labeled if you're battling with mental health issues. We looked at research that was done by SADC. They conducted an online survey. This was in 2020. And they spoke to a number of respondents and 59% of the surveyed people said they suffered from stress prior to the lockdown. And 65% felt stress during the lockdown. So this means that many South Africans experience some form of mental health illness or a level of unwellness at any given time. And according to the study, mental health and stigma in the workplace, that was the title of the study. 72% of the people surveyed said that mental illness was affecting their work performance and that their attempts to seek some kind of understanding from their superiors, that it was generally futile, since about 69% of them displayed indifference and a negative attitude. This is really high. And all of these attitudes do need to change if employers want a healthy and progressive environment for their workers. And cases over the years have pointed to this need to have this change in attitude and have created a kind of precedence. The cases that we've seen have created a precedent that mental illness is not taken as seriously, that it shouldn't be taken lightly, and it should not be a grounds for discrimination or exclusion in the workplace. And so today we're talking about this, mental health in the workplace, with Marie Sibuing. She is a human resource organizational effectiveness specialist. Marie, thank you so much for your time today on this very important issue.
Hello, Azania.
Hi, Marie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Azania, on your show. And of course, a very warm welcome to all of your listeners.
Yeah, well, you know, we spend so much time at work, on average 8 to 9 hours. So workplaces have to be prepared for dealing with mental health conditions of their employees. What does mental illness lead to generally in the workplace in terms of impact on the employer if it's not dealt with appropriately?
Yeah. Look, Azania, firstly, I just want to stop and just percolate on that number, because if you think about 400 million people worldwide suffer from mental health or some form of neurological disorder. So that's really quite a significant amount of people worldwide, but also within organizations. Mm. But to your question around what is the impact, is that generally, and I'm generalizing because there's quite a few number of mental health conditions, generally for those that are understood like anxiety or depression, is a significant loss of concentration and productivity. So what that means is if organizations don't do it effectively, they really overall don't have a productive workforce. Mm.
Yeah, so it's important that they know how to respond.
Absolutely. And I mean, part of the reason why organizations, you know, they respond poorly or don't respond at all is particularly because of the lack of awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, there's various reasons why organizations, there's a stigma or discrimination around these particular issues, is because of the lack of awareness. And it's also because employees are quite reluctant to disclose their conditions, and understandably so.
Mm. So why? Why are employees reluctant? What is the risk that we're afraid of?
Yeah. There's a few key reasons why we find that employees don't disclose. Mm. One, like I said, is the lack of awareness by the employer in terms of having to deal with the conditions. So, and it's not just on the employer side. Sometimes it's also the employee. Very often, you know, mental health conditions, the employees themselves don't fully understand their symptoms. And just having the language to express exactly what is going on, mm. that is one. But one of the primary reasons, if I must say, Azania, is because when employees do disclose their conditions, one of two things happen. Either one, the condition is completely overstated. So how organizations deal with it is to assume incompetence, or the person cannot function in the role, or the individual somehow gets isolated. So one of the primary reasons is really, really about the condition being overstated. The second one is really the opposite to that, is that being understated. Mm. You know, I think everybody knows of somebody who disclosed the condition and the organization either did nothing or say, you know, take a day off, or just did not respond in a way that was conducive to the situation. So it's either overstated or understated. But if you think about the context that we're in right now, Azania, is really part of the reasons why organizations, or individuals rather, would not disclose their conditions, is because of the economic climate. You know, it's very difficult to get jobs. There's been massive retrenchments with organizations. And sometimes it's just the fear of, it may be a career-limiting move, or perhaps even the prospect of promotion may be limited if employees disclose their conditions. That could be some of the reasons.
So on the overstated side, how should employers assess the link then between the mental health and performance of the employee before they decide to take a drastic step? Because, you know, dismissal is always somewhere lingering. So how should they go about establishing or assessing that link, like that my mental illness is affecting my productivity or my abilities at work?
Yeah. That's a good question. And one of the key things that I always re-emphasize is awareness. Make sure there's enough information about the condition, and not to make assumptions. So for instance, just as you would not diagnose a physical condition, you would not really diagnose a mental health condition. The first step would really be seeking the appropriate medical or psychosocial intervention. So really get the advice of a medical practitioner around the condition. That'll be one. And two, really then seek their guidance around what are possible interventions that this individual, how this individual can be supported. And by that I mean that if somebody, for instance, I'll make an example with you. God forbid, Azania, if something happened to you tomorrow and you broke your arm, what would happen in the workplace? I'm going to make some assumptions that if you came into work with a broken arm, that the organization would really make some reasonable accommodation, that you wouldn't have to lift very heavy things, that actually they would support you in doing some of the work, and even though you've got the benefit of your one hand, there was some aspect of your function that being impaired, they would support you to a point that you were fully able to carry out your role. I think one of the key things is to look at mental health in a similar way. It's the first thing to say, how do we help this individual who has some level of an impairment, and very often it's for a short period. So it's really around how do we support, how do we enable, how do we accommodate this person up into the time where they can really take up their role fully. That's the one. And of course, I'm drawing on the similarities, because actually it's not exactly the same thing. Because if you broke your arm, everybody would see that you've got it. The difference with the mental health condition is that people can't see it, so they don't know how to relate to it. And that's why it's critical to make sure that you get the right medical advice. So the first one would really be around the reasonable accommodation. The second one is, because mental health conditions are so vast, you really want to engage with the employee around asking, how best can I support you? So really it's about creating an environment where the individual in the process feels cared and concerned for. That goes a long way in terms of building the relationship and the ability for the individual to really reincorporate into the environment. And the third one really is around saying, if you're not able to accommodate them, what other roles can they potentially move into that are not going to be as triggering, that are not perhaps going to exacerbate the condition?
And this, of course, has to come before all these steps, before even a decision to dismiss someone. Can you be fired due to mental illness?
Look, I mean, when you say dismissal, it sounds like it is something...
Or medically boarded, I guess.
So, yes, you could be medically boarded if the individual was incapacitated. By that, I mean they are really no longer able to take up the core aspect of their role, so they don't have the capacity to take up the role that they're employed for. Then you would consider a process of medical incapacity. But before you got to that stage, you would, as an employer, have to demonstrate how you really reasonably accommodate that individual in the environment before getting to that stage. So the answer is yes, but there has to be fair process before even considering medical boarding.
So what are the rights of the employee with mental illness?
Look, similarly, the rights would be, you know, like I said, I'm going to draw on the comparison that if you had a physical illness, you would then get the advice of a medical practitioner. So they would firstly have the right to be able to seek advice externally from a medical professional. They would then have the right to be able to express their willingness to be able to apply for other roles in the organization. So they would be able to have the right to consider other roles. And then they also have, in the process, they've got the right to decide whether they want to remain in the role. So they've got the right also to resign. So it's not just for the employee side. They can also decide that actually a role may be too triggering or too exhausting for them to be in, that they can actually withdraw from the process as well. And they can actually resign from an organization.
Yeah. So how do we reduce or, you know, kind of dismantle stigma in the workplace? What can we do? What can employers do? Because, you know, the stats that I was giving earlier suggest that for many superiors are kind of indifferent or they have negative attitudes. So there's a lot of work that would need to take place to undo the stigma that is pervasive around mental illness.
Absolutely. And I started by saying that it's a lack of awareness. I think the first thing is for organizations to really create a greater awareness around mental health by designing interventions and policies that are able to capacitate leaders in HR and the organization to deal with mental health. You know, I gave the example about the somebody that had a physical illness. You wouldn't necessarily shy away from the conversation. Equally about creating awareness with mental health. The second one would really be, you know, outside of awareness, is really to create a culture that is open, so it encourages people to speak about mental health. Because some of the issue around mental health is that people feel very alone in the process. And I think if the culture is conducive for people to talk about mental health, you'd be quite surprised how many other people suffer with similar conditions. And therefore, the system will actually self-regulate because the support will actually become internal from employees themselves talking about mental health, as opposed to just something that happens between the leader and HR and the individual. So it's about creating a safe environment where everybody feels comfortable to engage about mental health.
Yes. Marie, let me just share this WhatsApp. It's a little bit lengthy, but I think it's worth going into. It says, regarding the discussion on mental health and employers' responsibilities, in parallel, there's a responsibility of the employee to make good decisions around their life, lifestyle, relationship, health choices. Employers' responsibility stops where people make selfish, bad decisions like drugs, bad abuse, abusive personal relationships, addictions of any sort that affect your work output, uncontrolled gambling, bad diet, and no exercise affecting health and social and work output, etc. So owning one's life means good mental health. No one is entitled by default. It takes both parties to contribute. And yes, there are those conditions that one develops, whether they saying out of this voice notes, there are certain conditions that are not due to lifestyle choices, mental health conditions that are not due to lifestyle choices. So is this perhaps part of the employee wellness program to ensure that employees are also empowered to make responsible decisions?
Absolutely. You know, part of the second part of my response that was that we've really explored what the employer can do.
Yeah.
The employee absolutely has got the agency and the responsibility for their mental health. So you cannot underestimate just the value of a good quality sleep, ensuring that the individual also is mindful about things like the screen time around digital detox, And also about living a healthy lifestyle. So really there's a great correlation between physical health and mental health. And that really is the responsibility of the employee as well.
Absolutely. And it's not a thing that employers can police at all. Very interesting, Marie. Thank you very much.
Oh, no, it's only a pleasure. And I think this conversation, we can expand further because it's really, there's a growing trend around mental health. If you think about really the impact of COVID-19 and how it's really exacerbated mental health illness, there's really a lot that we can talk about. There's a great sense of loss that exists for people, you know, because of the trauma of COVID-19. And that in turn has affected employees.
Absolutely.
So it's very important that employers are mindful of that and create the wellness programs that can support employees through the process.
Yeah. We'll continue to build on the story. That's Marie Seboeng, and Marie's a human resource organizational effectiveness specialist.